Old Ben and the Lad. The junior porter, known as the Lad, rode his bicycle down the station yard to the goods shed. He was first that morning, as usual. He leaned his bike up against the shed wall and went across the railway lines to the signal box to get the station keys. Stopping only to say, "Good morning," to the signalman, he made his way to the goods office built onto the end of the shed, ran up four worn sandstone steps, unlocked the door, and soon had a fire roaring away with sticks and coal he'd left ready the night before. He unlocked the inner door and stepped into the large goods shed. It was full of cattle feed, pig meal, turkey pellets, poultry meal, and every sort of food to feed everything on a farm, stacked in rows of some 2 bags high. One end held a stock of cement, also a pile of sundry items waiting to be delivered by the station lorry. In the middle of the floor stood a 30-hundredweight hand crane, firmly anchored in the ground beneath. In the high glazed roof, a flock of sparrows sat twittering on the girders. They had a good life. All the food they wanted down below and a dry place to live in. The same applied to the rats. Jimmy didn't like the rats. He stamped his feet as he walked across the shed, and they scuttled out of sight beneath the floor. The rats had gnawed holes in all the bags close to the wall and had an endless supply of food. He went down the 5 worn wooden steps to open the door across the rails. It weighed about 0.5 ton and ran on a rail, top and bottom. It needed some effort to open it, but with the help of a crowbar and some puffing and panting, the lad managed to slide it open. He dealt with the opposite door in the same way. By this time, the senior porter, known as Old Ben, put in an appearance, slowly riding his cycle down the station yard. He was small and bow-legged, with a perpetual grin and a rheumy eye, wearing a railway uniform and a wide-brimmed trilby hat from a long past era. No colour remained, and the brim sagged down, all stiffening gone. Old Ben, who was a bachelor, had a rented acre, a few beasts, fowl, and some ramshackle sheds. He'd wanted to be a farmer, but never made it. He was in the First World War driving horses in a limber. He used to tell Jimmy some hair-raising tales about driving his horses through shot and shell. The lad listened enthralled, believing every word.
Morning, Ben.
Morning, Jimmy. I nearly run over that rabbit at Padgett's Corner, said Ben. I shall have him one day.
It was a standing joke about the rabbit. They all knew Ben couldn't run a tortoise over, let alone a rabbit. If he went any slower, he'd fall off. The lad went off to light the fire in the station master's office. Old Ben took the teapot over to the box to mash. Later on, the station lorry arrived to take the bags of cattle food out to the farms. Ben loaded the lorry, while the lad went out with some of the signal lamps that were trimmed and lit by the signalman. Mid-morning saw the arrival of the goods trip train. It stopped at every station down the line, bringing incoming traffic and taking loads out. There were 3 vans of cattle feed and 4 empty wagons. The vans were put in the shed and set for unloading, the wagons down the yard. So, with a bit of smart work by the lad with the shunting pole, Old Ben never used it. The train was soon away. Then, more lorries to load until lunchtime. The cast iron kettle on the fire was boiling away, ready for the tea. The goods clerk was busy writing, perched on a high stool. He kept slightly aloof from the porters except for, "Good morning," or, "Would you get me some coal?" or, would you get me some water? With his clerical grey suit and a celluloid collar and tea in a flask. He had his own portable wash basin. It looked like a cupboard. The top opened on a hinge to expose a pot basin with a plug at the bottom. You filled it from a jug at the side. When you pulled the plug, it emptied into a bucket in another cupboard underneath. The lad filled the jug and emptied the bucket as required. There was no piped water on the premises. All water was hand-pumped from a well at the station, 200 yards away. After lunch, the lad went to finish the lamps. Old Ben made a beeline for the four empty wagons that came in on the trip train. He knew from experience they would yield all sorts of odd things. He was looking for nuts and bolts, bits of wood, metal plates, pieces of rope, wire, bits of tarpaulin sheet, anything to keep his ramshackle sheds from falling down. He never went home at night without something in his bag or tied to his cycle. His greatest find was a wagon coming in as empty, with the bottom covered a foot deep in assorted nails. It mattered not to old Ben that they were reject nails with all the points flattened. He filled his lunch bag, a big one for the job, every day for weeks with the cycle tires dangerously near the rims on the way home. He was always looking for long lengths of timber. If he found one, it would be strapped onto his cycle, not along the crossbar, but straight across the carrier. He would cycle home completely oblivious of 6 feet of timber sticking out across the narrow country roads. Motor cars were less than dust to old Ben. Jimmy the lad sat on the bags looking up at the sparrows when old Ben came out of the office looking like a St. Bernard that had lost its barrel. "The cement invoice has come," he said. They both stood silent. They hated the cement vans, but knew that stocks were down and would soon have to be replaced. Sure enough, on the tripper the next day, there they were, 2 10-ton cement vans. After putting them in the shed, Ben and the lad ignored them all the rest of the day. Next morning, they were still there, mute and foreboding. After lunch, the clerk said, "I think we'd better have the cement out."
"I like the bloody wee," muttered Ben underneath his breath.
They had special overall trousers and jackets for the cement, so they reluctantly put them on and went to the shed to open the van door. The sliding door opened an inch, then stuck. Ben peered through the crack.
"They've been loaded up against the sodding door," he said. "Get the bar, lad."
Both of them struggled with the bar and freed the sliding door open. 5 bags fell onto the shed floor with a thump. 2 of them had been torn right across from a protruding bolt on the door, and they were enveloped in a choking cloud of cement dust. The cement came in 100-weight Hessian bags that let the dust out at the slightest movement. It was an inch deep on the floor of the van. They got the heavy sack barrows and started to wheel the sacks out of the van across the shed to the open space allocated for cement.
After an hour, Ben said, "Let's have a blow, lad."
They were covered from head to foot in cement dust, their faces grey with it. Old Ben's eyes had watered and ploughed a furrow in the cement down his cheeks. His high crowned hat looked like a white Stetson on the Lone Star Ranger. The dust hung like a pall of smoke in the shed. Even the sparrows had gone. They walked over to the cart hole to get a bit of fresh air. The lad took off his railway cap and banged it against the wall in a cloud of dust. Old Ben took his trilby off. Not for him the harsh treatment of wall banging. He brushed it tenderly with his fingers.
"That cement's spoiling my hat," he said in all seriousness.
His face was a startling white, in contrast with his ruddy dome, hairless as an egg. On the top was a knob like a walnut. When the lad had first seen it, he'd asked in all his youthful innocence,
"Well, what's that knob on your head, Ben?"
Ben grinned and immediately launched into a gripping tale of the First World War, when a shell blast had overturned his limber, knocked him out, and ending with the words,
"And this here knob never went down."
The lad believed every word. They struggled on until knocking off time. Then Ben brushed the van floor clear of spillage, half-filled his spare bag, and strapped it onto his cycle carrier.
"That's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick," he said,
a favourite saying of his when loading his cycle. The weighbridge at the station stood at the top of the drive by the entrance. It was built in the days when the longest vehicle was a four-wheeled horse-drawn dray, which could stand with all wheels on the weighing platform. When lorries came along, the wheels were far too far apart to go on the platform, so they had to be weighed twice. The front half, then the rear half, added together, and the unladen weight subtracted. Inside the weighbridge was a long balance beam with a brass slide on it to indicate hundredweights and quarters. At the end hung small weights for the tons. The whitewashed walls bore the marks of hundreds of pencilled additions and subtractions, and many a heated argument was held with the driver before tuppence was handed over for the ticket signed by the porter. Old Ben wasn't very keen on adding and subtracting, so when a lorry appeared on the weighbridge, there were always great shouts of, "Where's the lad?" who, when available, did all the weighing. At the month end came the dreaded bill-collecting time. The lad didn't like this job, but was always called upon to go. Old Ben said he was too old to bike all that way, and why the hell couldn't they be sent by post? Some were, of course, but a lot, within 4 or 5 miles, were sent out with the lad. It saved the stamps. He was allowed to use the station cycle, a big, heavy machine with a plate on it saying LMS and the station name. Most bills were for farmers for hire of LMS sacks and goods sent by rail, etc. Many farms lay at the end of long, rutted, muddy lanes, and often the lad would end up carrying the cycle, first arming himself with a stout stick cut from the hedge. He knew as he walked through the farmyard what it would be like. Two large dogs, barking and growling, looking like they would tear him to pieces, appeared, and making enough noise to waken the dead. He held the cycle in front of him like a shield, and managed to get to the side door. A woman appeared, and looked at him in amazement, not speaking. But eventually the conversation began.
"Morning, I've brought the bills."
"What bills?"
"The bills from the station."
"The station?"
Despite the fact that he was in full railway uniform, complete with LMS on lapels and peaked hat.
"The railway station."
Conversation ceased. The woman made no attempt to stop the dogs barking. They crept closer and looked as though they hadn't had a square meal for weeks. The lad clutched his bike and stick and wondered why the dogs didn't go and tear a few fowl to pieces that were pecking in a nearby muck heap. Then the conversation continued.
"I don't know anything about that."
She hadn't taken the envelope from him yet. He read the name and the farm to her.
"This is the farm."
"Yes."
It's a bill for some things you had from the station. I'm here to collect the money."
She reluctantly took the envelope, holding it as though it was going to explode. He sees to all that.
Where is he?
He's ploughing in the 20-acre. Silence fell. The dogs had got fed up barking and just stood, looking. He knew from bitter experience that if he walked across the fields to find he wouldn't have the money on him and wouldn't leave the ploughing to walk to the house to pay. So he said, "I'll call another day." The woman said nothing and watched him walk across the yard to carry his cycle down the lane. That was his first call. He knew there would be many more like that. When he arrived back at the station that evening, old Ben was loading his cycle.
"Had a good day, lad?"
he asked.
"No, I haven't. I've covered in mud and nearly been torn to pieces by bloody wild dogs," he said.
Ben grinned and continued to strap two long pieces of timber crosswise on the carrier, sticking out at great risk to passing motorists. He also had a bag of something that clanked mysteriously. When Ben cycled slowly up the yard on his way home, the signalman opened the window and shouted,
"I see you're travelling out of gauge again tonight, Ben. I've put you through on a 263.
263 was the out-of-gauge bell signal for trains that required the adjoining line to be blocked. Ben said, "Ah," and carried on his own sedate way.